Good evening. This is the meeting of the Pacifica National Board Election Committee. I'm the chair pro tem, Bob Lederer, and can we have our secretary pro tem, Yosh Yamanaka, please call the roll?
Yes. Wesley Bethune. Wesley. Carolyn Burden. Carolyn.
Oh, sorry. I was muted here.
Jim Brown. Jim. Steve Brown. Steve. Who just dialed in?
Steve Brown.
Okay, just in time. Bill Crozier.
What?
Well, for
I'm
the
here.
Roll call. Bill Crozier.
I'm here.
Anthony Fest.
Here.
Tracy Larkins.
I'm here.
Warren Marr. Warren. Bob Lederer.
Here.
Ithia Wangaza.
Here.
George Ryder. George. Who just called in?
Wesley Bethune, KPFT.
Okay, thank you, Wesley. George. Wendy Schrell.
Here.
Bonnie Simmons. Bonnie. Yosh Yamanaka is here, and we do have quorum.
Hey, Yosh?
Yes.
I don't think George is on this committee, because I am. I'm the director from KPFT.
Okay. I'm happy to make that deletion.
Okay, thanks.
Not happy, but I will make that deletion.
Okay, thanks, Yosh. So let's go to consideration of the draft agenda, which I circulated earlier this evening. I'll read it for those who are listening. Number one, approval of the agenda. Two, process for election of chair and secretary, 10 minutes. Three, approval of meeting minutes for 5 minutes. Four, meeting schedule, whether to meet on fixed days each month for 10 minutes. Five, several items concerning the RFP working group and process that we're in. A would be a report on the bidder interview process, 5 minutes. B, implication of the PNB motion changing the relationship of the NES and the vendor, 30 minutes. C, the next step with the bidder review and recommendation process, with a reminder that the discussion of specific bidders will be held until our executive session at the end. That would be 15 minutes. D, the NES and litigation liability, 10 minutes. And then, I'm sorry?
Next one should be E.
Right, I mislettered that. It should be E. Pros and cons of hybrid election, meaning a combination of mail-in ballots and electronic voting, 15 minutes. And then number six, update the 2004 manual for NES and LESs, 10 minutes.
Excuse
then,
me, Bob?
Yes.
Isn't that a long process to update the entire manual? Do you think 10 minutes is going to be enough?
I don't think the item was to do the update on this call. I think it's to decide what the process should be and who should do it and how.
Got it.
Okay. Seven, working group reports. A, membership list cleanup, 10 minutes. B, cost savings, and under that would be the proposal to extend delegate terms to 4 years, 10 minutes. C, staff list, implementation of motion passed but not acted upon concerning the updating of the list by GMs. 10 minutes, and then old business, the motion on arbitration of disputes of unpaid staff lists, 15 minutes, then new business, there's three items, transition to electronic voting, pros and cons.
Excuse me, question, should
yes.
that be part of 5E?
Which, transition to electronic voting?
Yeah, because 5E is pros and cons of hybrid election, both mail-in ballots plus electronic voting. They seem to me they should be conjoined in some way.
Well, we can put that to the committee. I can't remember who asked for this to be on the agenda, but I think it's a somewhat separate question as to a complete transition to total electronic voting versus the possibility of a hybrid this year. But does anyone want to take a position on what to do with this?
I'm
Bill.
I think Carolyn. Yeah.
Carolyn, go ahead, and then Bill.
Thank you. I would agree to combine them up ahead and
simply because it makes sense, even if we have to extend that by a few minutes.
Okay, Bill, was that Bill?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, well, is there any objection to combining them? Okay, hearing none, they're combined. Why don't we, shall we make the combined amount 25 minutes instead of 15? Any objection to that? Okay, so that's done. Next item is changes to MEMSIS that we want to request or recommend. Actually, I think, Carolyn, that was your point. Do you want to put a time limit on that?
Well, I don't have a complete list, and I have not bothered to collect it, so
okay,
it'll
so
be
you'll
brief,
want to
but
postpone
I can, we can
that.
Certainly collect a team, perhaps, to help with that. Thank you.
Okay.
5 minutes is good.
Okay, 5 minutes. All right, and then finally the motion, long been waiting for, regarding campaign finance reform, 20 minutes. And then at 10 p.m., adjourn to executive session to discuss the particulars of RFP bids, and I'm proposing an adjourn time for the entire meeting of 10:45. Are there any amendments? Okay, hearing none, is there any objection to adopting this agenda with that one amendment? Okay, hearing none, it's adopted. So the next item is the process for election of chair and secretary. By any chance, has Jim Brown joined the call? Okay, well, since he's the only person at the moment from WPFW who is elected to this committee, and since he's not on the call, we don't know if the other two people have been elected, which last year our approach was to say we should have the permanent election of chair and secretary as soon as we have the full complement of the committee. So is there any objection to continuing that? I'm certainly hoping by the next meeting we'll have those elected people from PFW and then we can move to that election. Is there any objection to that?
No, and actually we have another reason for continuing. With the resignation in K, they have to elect someone else too, I believe, to this committee.
Yes, the director.
Oh, it's a director, so it's just an appointment. All right. Okay, but we still don't have an announcement of that. So, no objection to continuing.
I'm sorry, who resigned?
Leslie Radford.
Leslie.
From the PNB?
No, from the this committee.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Okay, so if there's no objection, then Yosh will continue as secretary pro tem, and I'll continue as chair pro tem. All right. Okay, moving on to the approval of meeting minutes. Yosh?
Let me see. I circulated at least one more set of minutes earlier today. And at this point, I'm not in front of my computer. I think those may have been the March minutes and as well as December minutes, I believe.
It was January.
January. Okay, January and March. And both of those were vetted pretty closely by me. I went back over the tape and I... The meeting was so much fun, I decided I would listen to it again.
Okay, any comments on either of those two or anyone who didn't get to read them and wants to hold off? Actually, I myself only really glanced at the March minutes, so I would prefer if we could postpone that till the next meeting, postpone their approval.
What about January?
Right. Any
memories are getting stale, I would point out.
Right. Any other opinions, comments on January?
This is Wendy.
Yeah.
So if you're the only one who hasn't had a chance to read the minutes, don't you think we could approve them and then you could look at them afterwards and bring changes later if you had any?
We could, if that's the committee's wish.
I would move that we approve both of them.
Second.
Okay. Yeah, we don't need seconds in committees. Is there any? Well, let's just separate them for a minute. Is there any objection to approving the January minutes? Okay, so they're approved. Is there any objection to approving the March minutes? Okay, so they're approved as well. All right.
Thank you, Wendy.
The next item is the meeting schedule. Now, let me point out that we've already set the April date. It's Monday, April 20th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. So the question I believe Carolyn had raised was whether we want to set a fixed time each month. And I would just remind folks that since we still don't have our full complement, I think out of respect for it's now going to be three additional people who will be joining this committee, I would recommend we postpone this question until those three are with us.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Steve Brown?
Steve.
My suggestion is that we go ahead and fix a date, and if they come in and cannot make those dates, then we'll deal with it then, rather than, again, be, at loose ends as to when these dates would be.
I concur. Okay, would someone like to make a specific proposal?
For a date in May?
I don't care what the date is, just that it's fixed.
Well, yes, I would move then that we fix our meetings for the third Monday of each month, unless we vote otherwise.
Okay. Got any discussion of that motion?
I think that's very appropriate from Carolyn, because I note that the third Monday in May. Oh, I thought it said Valentine's Day, but actually it's Victoria Day. I'm sorry, it's not Valentine's Day.
Same thing if you love England.
And why would either of those be appropriate?
Well, Valentine's Day, spread the love. I thought that would be very appropriate.
I think you missed it, Yosh.
Uh-oh. I'm too early, Wendy.
I'm touched.
Right. I'm fine with the 18th.
That sounds good.
Okay, so the proposal is the third Monday of each month starting in May. Is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, is there any objection? Okay, that's adopted. All right, now we move on to the RFP working group, and I need a timekeeper for the rest of the meeting. Would someone please volunteer?
Bill, I'll do it.
Thank you very much, Bill. Okay, so the first item is report on the bidder interview process. We have 5 minutes for that, and Anthony, you're the facilitator of that working group, so can you just give us an update? And let me just remind the committee that in this whole discussion on the public stream, we should not be mentioning the names of any bidders, or if there's discussion about past election supervisors or, problems with the way they did their jobs or anything like that, we should avoid all names and just discuss the concepts but not the individuals or the company's name. So, Anthony.
Okay, well, we have had interviews with, three of the four bidders who remained, as well as a supplementary conversation with one of them. And we did a ranking. Can't name the names, but one did seem to stand out. We're not sure what do you like to touch on, Bob?
Well, whatever
those
you think.
Constraints about not naming names.
Well, anyone from the working group, if you want to offer a general reflection on the process, not on the pros and cons of any individual bidder, but just things that you've learned in the process. And by the way, just for those who may be confused, the ranking, as I recall, was before the interviews. We have not done a ranking since the interviews yet.
That's right. The rankings were done very early this month, then the interviews came later.
Right, and so that's something we'll have to discuss in executive session as to, moving forward on a ranking process. But does anyone else want to add what's gone on in general?
Yes, this is Yosh.
Go ahead.
I'd, I'd like to ask a question. Maybe someone can refresh my recollection. When we ranked the four bids, did we rank one through four and decide that we were not going to interview the low person or the low vendor?
Yeah, we voted to interview the top three.
Right. Okay, thank you.
And we've now done that.
Right.
Well, I will just offer my own observation that each interview brought new insights into the, you know, some of the twists and turns of the process, and I think they all had different kinds of experience that were useful and kind of highlighted some pitfalls we need to think through. So it was a good exercise, regardless of the outcome. Anyone else want to add any comments?
Carolyn?
Go ahead.
Yeah, do we have any revised proposals based on our new RFP?
What new RFP?
Asking for RFP for an NES.
Well, we haven't issued it such a...
Well, we haven't, but informally, I believe, the candidates were notified of this. And did any of them change their submissions or their proposals?
One of them sent an email in, was it yesterday, Yosh?
I think I sent it out. I can't even remember.
Yeah,
it was probably yesterday.
Yeah, it was dated yesterday.
Right. So, yes, to answer Carolyn's question, there has been a supplemental or an amended bid based upon new information that the vendor received.
Do we have any indication that the other two vendors are... thinking about submitting revised proposals at all or not?
Well, I think as far as one of the three vendors, they had no interest in the NES. I don't think that position has changed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As far as I know, and I confess I've not even looked at the amended, which I did circulate yesterday, but I've not had time to look at it. As far as I know, there are only two vendors who presently express an interest in the NES position.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, if there's nothing more on the report, then why don't we move to the implications of the PNB motion changing the relationship of the NES and the vendor. So I know that Bill has written some extensive emails on this, so do you want to start the discussion and then we'll... open it to others?
Okay. Maybe I should first ask if anybody has any questions about what I wrote up. That might save time.
I'm sorry. Before you go on, you're keeping time on this.
I'm keeping time, yes.
It's 30 minutes.
Okay.
Altogether. Okay. So, yeah, any questions for Bill about what he wrote? I think there may be people who didn't have time to read your email, so you should probably summarize what you wrote.
Okay, I guess the main summary was addressing Carolyn's motion that was passed by the PNB a couple of weeks ago, which dealt with having the NES being independent of the vendor. And my concerns were that distinction is not necessary, and that it might cause additional problems, and that we discussed in quite some length last year in the Elections Committee. That's in a nutshell.
Okay, and you had what were you proposing should be done?
Well, my suggestion was to rescind the motion, recommend to the PNB that they rescind the motion, but that Carolyn did have some valid concerns, and I think that they would apply regardless of whether that motion was in effect or not. Some of her concerns were, for example, to ensure that the vendor, or the NES, excuse me, was, and also the LESs, were really interested in getting out the vote, publicizing the elections, helping make sure we had enough candidates, as well as voter turnout. And maybe Carolyn can address some of her other points.
Carolyn?
Well, thank you. Those were... those were side points, as Bill points out, and they would obtain no matter what we did. But I was most concerned about potential for a conflict of interest if we hired a vendor in a package deal with a national supervisor. And there came a time when there was an issue, and we've had examples of this in the past, where the national supervisor was pressed by perhaps the ED or other political entities to make a decision and had to choose between, let's say, the vendor and the interests of Pacifica. My fear was that because he was an employee of the vendor, he would naturally side with the company that had brung him, and that we would end up with a decision that was not in Pacifica's best interest, but was in the best interest of the national supervisor and perhaps the company that had hired him. So I would like to see a separate relationship between the national supervisor and the ED from that between the vendor and the ED. In other words, I'd like to make sure that we have two contracts and two separate relationships. What I had proposed was that a vendor be lined up and agree to the arrangement that a national supervisor be a separate entity and that a national supervisor be chosen and work out a contract, in essence, an agreement, a division of duties and responsibilities with the vendor, and after that was done to the ED's satisfaction and the vendors and the supervisor satisfaction, at that point, the national supervisor would be hired, and then he or she could hire that vendor. And that would maintain a chain of command and relieve the executive director from having to direct a company as well as a supervisor. I thought it would be enough to have an executive director in charge of a supervisor, not a separate company.
Mr. So Chair?
That was my solution to my concerns.
Chair?
Yes, Steve.
Steve. Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, there are conflicts of interest possible both ways. And although it's possible for the vendor to influence the NES for issues of cost-cutting or other matters, it's just as possible for the executive director to influence the NES in a politically motivated manner. I'm not pointing at anybody, but it's happened in the past. May happen again. So you have to take a choice of which conflict of interest you want. I would feel safer if the election supervisor were hired by the vendor in conjunction with the with Pacifica, whether it was the executive director or not. And that way, all parties would be happy because the election supervisor would be the vendor's boss, but not answerable to the executive director. That would be my position.
Wendy?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think I agree with Steve. Here's, you know, the election supervisor has to have some kind of a boss. It's great to say that they're independent, but if they're really bad at their job, we have to be able to get rid of them. And so, really, I don't think it's a bad thing to have the ED in charge of the, I mean, at least at arm's length or whatever, in charge of the election supervisor. This echo is disturbing me. Anyway, I just, you know, think that a company actually has a little more at stake in this. To do a good job, that's their business. They're in elections. So I don't really see the same problems that Carolyn has. I know that we can't go and make rules due to specific situations that happen one time. Our rules that we make have to apply to equally all across the board to every situation. So I think, and I agree with Steve more than Carolyn.
Okay. Who else would like to speak?
Well, it's Bill again.
Go ahead.
If nobody else has spoken yet. I guess the major points I was concerned about are things that have happened repeatedly in past elections. And when we discussed some of this last year in the Elections Committee, I think we agreed that one of the recurring problems was an NES or possibly LESs who were influenced by the Pacifica election process, either in reality or at least there was the perception of bias because of connections to somebody they knew who was on the PNB or management or something like that, and also lack of professionalism and commitment that this was their career to be an election administrator, so therefore, you know, their continuing work with a company might help ensure that they were going to do a good job for us, and then also this the finger pointing sort of situation. If you have if you don't have a single vendor or a single person doing anything, everything, which would not be possible, then when things go wrong, like missing ballots or no replacement ballots, we've had problems over and over where it's hard to find out who is responsible. And the NES would claim that sometimes that they told so-and-so to send the ballots and they weren't sent out. And the LESs told us that they were told they were sent out, but nothing ever happened. And that's happened, I think, at all the stations more than once. So having a single organization responsible, I think, would reduce the chances of that happening. And at least let us hold them accountable afterwards, if necessary.
Jim here.
Go ahead, Jim. Welcome.
I agree that we have to have a way of holding somebody accountable for for anything that goes wrong, and that we have to have the authority to rectify the problems that may occur. And I think that a reputable company is the way to go, because we don't have to point fingers all over the place. We can go right to that company and hold them responsible for anything that goes wrong. I'm agreeing. That's the.
This is Grace. I'd like to speak.
Okay, go ahead, Grace.
Well, the first thing is we can't just wave aside what it says in the bylaws. We can't assume that a company would be responsible the way. I mean, the bylaws clearly state that the executive director hires a national election supervisor. It doesn't stipulate that a company should be hired. The problem I have with a company, although early on I thought it was a good idea, is that the largest deficiency in our past elections, from my perspective, has been the inability to broadly involve our listenership in the elections, which has led to kind of a musical chair situation within the blank. You fill out whatever analogy you want. But there has been a lack of people coming forward as candidates from the broad listenership. So this, to me, and this, having spoken to a couple of vendors, companies don't want to get involved in the internal working of the stations because of the fact that that adds to their liability as a firm. If they stick to the mechanical aspects of the election alone, they're safe. Once they get into what, in my opinion, is a far more important part of the election process, which is engaging and involving the broad listenership, they have a lot more liability. So I am not reassured that any of these companies will fulfill what I consider the most important part of the election process, which is engaging our broad listenership so that we have the broadest diversity of candidates to choose from for our local boards. that's the criteria that I would be using. I prefer to look at the election in terms of what the functionality is of the election process rather than the mistakes that have been made in just in terms of the ballot counting, because that's the very last part of the election, and if the ballot counting is flawed, but the ballots themselves, the candidates themselves, were from overwhelmingly from insiders who are have a history of being strongly engaged at the stations rather than the broad listenership, we're tweaking one part of the process and missing the vast deficiencies in our elections, which is the failure to engage the broader listenership in the process. And the companies seem to be unwilling to engage in that. They're willing to do the more mechanical aspects of the election, and I'm sure that they would do an excellent job in that. But the more important part, in my estimation, which is ensuring that the elections really fulfill their purpose according to the bylaws, is not being addressed by, it doesn't seem to me, adequately by the vendors themselves.
Bob?
Yeah.
Grace, wouldn't that be the job of the Pacifica National Board and the executive director to ensure that the managers are airing the proper number of cards and that kind of stuff? I don't see how that's the job of the elections person. They have no power to do that.
This is Tracy. I want to echo that.
I think it's up to us to hold them accountable, and we have a chance to do that this year. I think this is apples and oranges that we're talking about now. Carolyn, I'll back, please.
Okay, I had Tracy, and then I actually wanted to make a comment, and then Carolyn. So, Tracy, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Wendy, but I was going to say the same thing exactly. It seems that the general managers are the only ones that have control over the listener subscribership. They have a control over the list of who is who. So they're the ones that need to be mobilizing the base, not the election supervisors. They should be impartial. Thank you. And sorry if I'm echoing.
Okay, and what I want to say was that, I agree with the last point about the role of the general managers and so on, but beyond that, I don't think it's a given or it should be an assumption that anyone, however loosely connected to one of the bidder companies, is going to be unwilling to do a kind of expansive effort to reach out to recruit as many candidates or to call forward people to nominate themselves as widely as possible, to participate in the vote. All of those things, which I agree are something that an NES can play some limited role in. We can't assume that that won't happen. As a matter of fact, one candidate already made it clear that they strongly believe that that should be part of the role. So I don't think that has anything to do with the question of a company or no company. And the other issue, which I think is not clear to everyone, is that we had already said, and the PNB had approved months ago, that this could be a bifurcated bidding process, that 1 through 3 were, was basically hiring an NES, and the LESs and the other part were the more, if you will, mechanical aspects, which start way sooner than the ballot count. They start with, making sure the lists are in order before the ballots are mailed, making sure the ballots properly reflect all qualified candidates. All those intermediate steps are part of that. And there's no reason we can't continue to proceed that way. So in other words, the NES would be separately hired. She or he would have their own contract with Pacifica. And then it would be up to the IED, basically, but, you know, hopefully with the advice and consent of this committee and with the board, as to perhaps maybe it either should or shouldn't be someone who is connected to a company or not. But I think what's really important is that there be a good working relationship between the NES and whatever company. And so, you know, I think the arrangement as we had it allowed for that and was fully compliant with the bylaws. And also it made clear that the LESs as well would have to be hired with the approval of the ED. So that was never clouded or questioned in the old or in the current RFP, that we're fully complying with the bylaws. It was only a question of, you know, this issue of, which actually isn't in Carolyn's motion, but it was in the language she used orally to explain the motion, where she said the NES is not either an employee of the vendor or tied to the vendor in any way that would compromise his or her independence. If we're taking that to be the real meaning of the motion, I think it's a mistake because it closes the door on some of the potentially most highly qualified candidates. People have been doing this for years. They've had a good track record. They're professionals at this. They're not somebody who just, as I think Bill said, was just unemployed right now and, you know, has dabbled in this and might like to try their hand at it. Okay, I'm done. Next was Carolyn.
Yeah, thank you. You right up to the last, Bob, you expressed exactly what I was getting at. I do think that if we can separate the candidates from the companies, we're not going to close the door on any good candidates. It's quite possible to think about hiring candidates for supervisor independently of the companies. And I think that we need to look at that carefully because that's already been proposed to some extent, and that's quite possible. So I do think we have to do that. I agree with Grace, though, that the mechanical aspects, while they're very important and they're crucial, and they were the basis of very serious problems last time, wouldn't have happened if we had had a national supervisor who was very much attuned to the bylaws and very much concerned about the bigger picture. So I think our first point is to make sure that we get someone with experience, with integrity, with a track record in the issues that we consider really important, and from there get a vendor that person can work with. And, as I said, separate contracts and a relationship that's clearly spelled out. For instance, just to take one example of where the rubber meets the road, the staff lists and the membership lists, who is going to be responsible for those? According to the PNB, we are. The general managers are responsible for making sure their lists are in order. And yet we've not been able to enforce that. Are we going to force the national supervisor to do what the general managers have not been able to do? Sure, they should be, but in the end, it's the supervisor who has to be able to say that, yes, this election is based on clean lists, and everyone who gets a ballot deserves one. If they can't say that, at what point does the ED step in and say, all right, we're going to have to cancel that election because the lists aren't ready, or we're going to have to do the list and work around the managers who will not cooperate with us. So somewhere there has to be an agreement as to whose responsibility it is, and that has to be spelled out. So those are the things that need some negotiating. So I would like to see a negotiation process between whoever we would like to see as supervisor and whichever group we would like to see as vendor. And maybe some of the things that the vendors describe as in their bailiwick, the supervisor would be better at, and so that person would take on that responsibility. But it is a lot of negotiations, I agree. So I don't think we're too far apart on that, except that I don't think we should be fixed to a company if, in fact, we like the supervisor or vice versa.
This is Grace. I'd like to...
Okay, just one second, Grace. I have a point of information for Carolyn. I'm a little confused about something that was said earlier. Under your motion, did you say that the NES would, once she or he is hired, then they would in turn hire or retain a firm? Did I hear that correctly?
Well, it seems to me that, in essence, that's probably the way it should work, because if an NES is hired separately from a firm and then we find out they can't work together, we're stuck. So I would like to see vendors, a vendor identified and an NES identified and have them lock them in a room together until they come out with an agreement. And then we'll have two entities, perhaps ideally two separate contracts, or at least an agreement of who will do what and a working relationship. But essentially,
okay.
I'd like to follow the bylaws and have the ED hire a national election supervisor and then have the supervisor hire a vending company.
So
unless
just,
we get legal
okay.
advice, that's not workable.
Well, here's my question. So we're going to pay the entire fee for the company and the supervisor to the supervisor, and then that person will pass on the portion of the fee that goes to the company that they're subcontracting to? That'll devastate their taxes for that year.
Well, if that's what you're proposing, you're probably
no,
right.
No, I'm not.
Well, I'm not
I'm
either.
Asking you what you're proposing.
Well, no, you're well, don't... well, ask then. I wouldn't propose that, certainly. I would like to see some relationship worked out so that, commensurate with their responsibilities, the pay is equitable. And I'm sure that can be worked out. But
well, what I'm asking is Pacifica paying the contractor or is the NES paying the contractor? That's my question.
It's all the same money. If we're paying an NES to hire a vendor, we have to pay the NES enough to do the job. If we're paying a vendor and an NES, we have to pay them both enough to do the job. So I don't see that the amount of money is going to differ. It's a question of who is responsible for it. And as Yosh pointed out, we might want to get some legal advice on how that would work out legally. It may not save us a thing, but I suspect, given our past history, that we would be wise to concentrate responsibility and make sure that we hire someone who can handle it. Also, as a side matter, someone on speakerphone, could that person mute themselves while they're not talking? Because I think that's the source of the echo, if I hear it correctly.
Okay, Grace, go ahead.
Okay, I don't disagree with Wendy and Tracy. However, I would hope that this committee would write policy and protocol that would be enforceable by the Pacifica National Board so that the general managers consistently get cards run on the air in the nomination period, that a record is kept of the rotation of the carts, that some accommodation for Spanish language carts is made, that the job descriptions of the general managers and the program directors at least be modified to include their responsibilities as regards the elections and their part in the elections. And I would hope that this election committee would craft this policy, which would then be including enforcement mechanisms, because in the past it's been very difficult to gain the cooperation of the general managers and the program directors at the stations. So there should be, what I'm saying is there should be a consistent national policy regarding the outreach to the listenership at the various stations, and that the program directors and general managers should be instructed to follow this policy, and that there should be an enforcement mechanism so that that policy will be implemented. And I would expect this election committee to craft that policy, and I think it would pass on the PNB level very rapidly. The same would go for the integrity of the mailing list. If we're going to give that over to the general managers to do, then we have to have strict policy with enforcement mechanisms to ensure that that's done. I'm stressing this at this point because this is the first part of the election process. Without those parts being in place, the last part, we can worry about the later parts of the election a little bit later. But the first part of the election, if botched, is it really very difficult, if not impossible, to rectify later on? So I would like to request committee come up with such policy. The other thing is that reading of the bylaws is that the interim ED or the executive director is charged with hiring a national election supervisor. Ricardo DeAnda does also agree with that interpretation, not interpretation. That's what the bylaws clearly state. So I don't see any way that this group can do an end run around the bylaws and redefine what the definition of national election supervisor is. I understand all of the concerns you have, but my concern is how the election is conducted. So I totally agree with Wendy, but it becomes our primary responsibility then to ensure that we have policy that's enforceable and will be carried out at the station level if we're not going to charge the National Election Supervisor with that enforcement.
Well, just for the record, there were some policies passed in prior years, and I can look for those. So a lot of what you're saying, I think, has already been done as far as enforceability of mandates for the GMs. And I just want to say that I really think it's incorrect to describe what this committee has done as making an end run around the bylaws. We have been crystal clear. The RFP was extremely clear that the ED would appoint the NES and the LESs. That's a completely separate issue than whether a company is hired to do part or all of this work. Clearly, well, it would never be all of the work, but it could be wrapped into an agreement if the ED agreed that a particular individual that the company was suggesting would be a qualified NES. But that would still be an independent relationship between the ED and the NES. So nobody has ever proposed anything different than that. So I just want to correct the record on what has gone before. So
Carolyn, start again, please.
Okay, I'll call on Carolyn. And then, Bill, have you been tracking time? Where are we at with this?
We have about 4 minutes to go. Oh, excuse me, 3 minutes to go.
And are you going to want to move a motion on this, Bill?
Yes.
You suggested you would. Okay, so actually, Carolyn, you've spoken twice. Bill, why don't you move your motion and then...
Well, it is a point of information for something Grace said. I'll talk very quickly, if I may.
Is that a question?
No, it's...
Okay, then let me call on Bill and then I'll call on you. Go ahead, Bill. Offer your motion.
Well, I move that the election committee recommend to the PNB that they rescind the motion on dealing with the NES that they passed at the March 8th meeting.
Okay. Did you want to motivate that anymore?
Well, basically, I've brought it already. I feel that it complicates, it puts a needless complication in the hiring the election vendor process and may prevent us from solving some of the problems that we talked about quite a bit last year.
Okay. Carolyn?
Thank
Carolyn?
You. Yes, thank you, although it wasn't on the motion. You are correct that we have passed, the Elections Committee has passed many things. None of them had any teeth that an ED could take to the bank. They're the last ED, and I'm sure Grace is finding the same thing. There's no enforcement mechanism in these motions. We pass a motion asking the GMs to do lists and so on and so forth, no enforcement mechanism, and that's simply what she asked for, and I think that we need to address that directly.
Well, we can definitely put that on the agenda of the next meeting of this committee. No question about that. All right, well, there's a motion on the floor. Is there a discussion of the motion?
I was distracted. Can we just read the motion again?
Sure, Bill.
Okay. I move that the election committee recommend that the PNB rescind the motion passed on March 8th dealing with the independence of the NES.
Okay. Any discussion?
Carolyn?
Okay. Is there anyone who hasn't spoken?
Yeah, this is Sean Casey O'Brien from KPFW. Thank you very much.
Okay, but you're not a member of the committee, so is there any committee member who would like to speak?
No. Please. I'm not so sure I'm not a member of this committee.
Well, the PNB has not elected you to this committee.
That may just be take a matter of time. Thank you very much.
Okay. is there any committee member who would like to speak?
Besides Carolyn?
By the way, we're at time.
Okay, we're at time, so now we have to extend. Is there a motion to extend?
Motion to extend for 3 minutes.
Okay, I think that's not really going to be adequate for a motion of this, you know, major nature. Why don't we make it, is there any objection to 10 minutes? Okay, hearing none, that we're extended for 10 minutes, and Carolyn, you're next.
Yeah, I think someone suggested that we need some legal advice on one of the issues here, and I think that may be correct. So I'd like to amend that we ask our foundation counsel a question about the legal liability that was raised earlier and consider this motion after we receive an answer. So effectively, I'd like to table this motion pending receipt of legal advice on the question.
This is Wendy.
One of the questions that was raised.
Okay, so technically that should be worded as a motion to postpone this motion until we've gotten legal advice on the liability issue. Wendy?
Okay, I'm just going to go ahead, and it's short, so I'm just going to read what that motion is. It says, the vendor shall work with and under the direction of a national election supervisor hired by the executive director as required in the bylaws of the Pacifica Foundation, and that this NES shall be responsible for appointing and supervising a local election supervisor at each of the 5 signal areas. And that's all it says. So I don't think that this motion, I mean, I understand the motivation behind it, but it's not stated in the motion. This motion here does not change anything we were talking about. So I don't have any problem with rescinding it or it being there. I think that it still says that the ED hires the NES, and the NES, I mean, unless there's something I'm not understanding, but and that the NES hires the LESs. It doesn't have anything to do with any vendor or anything. Can anybody explain to me what does this motion do?
Well, I could offer one thing, which, again, I read earlier, but this is from Bill's transcription of the meeting. Carolyn offered, in motivating her motion, quote, the NES was not either an employee of the vendor or tied to the vendor in any way that would compromise his or her independence. So while that wasn't in the wording of the motion, it was understood to be the meaning or the way it should be implemented. So, to me, the problem may not be with the wording of the motion on its face, but this language that was said to be the interpretation of the motion that precludes any person who has any connection, however tenuous, with a company, an election vendor company, from being appointed as NES. So that's what I would make, perhaps the motion could be clarified to remove that preclusion, that limiting of candidates for NES.
Well, if I may explain.
Yeah, go ahead, Carolyn.
The reason it didn't say that is because it didn't say that. The intention was to leave the language very simple and leave the interpretation of it to the good sense of whoever was doing the hiring. I particularly did not make the motion any more restrictive than it was. I simply wanted the principal emphasize that, in fact, the ED hires the NES. I don't think that when we're talking about a motion, we can talk about the way in which people explain it or interpret it or even intend it, unless it's not clear. I think the intention of that is very simple, and it's what it is on its face. So Wendy's correct. It doesn't change things. It reinforces what is there.
So then I just am unclear now, Carolyn. So since you are the author of the motion, then you can answer what would be proper under this motion. Would it be proper for the IED to choose to hire someone who had some sort of relationship in the past or present with one of the vendors? Would that be allowed or not allowed?
I think what I said was that the nature of the relationship, and I said a lot of this in our email back and forth, What I'm concerned with is the possible conflict of interest between
I'm not asking what you're concerned with. I'm asking what would be allowed under this motion. Would it be allowed to hire such a person or not allowed?
It would depend on the nature of the relationship and on the intent of the ED in doing the hiring. And I think now we've had an added wrinkle, and that is the question of legal liability of an NES. That certainly would concern me, the extent of any legal liability of someone with a prior relationship or a stated future relationship with a vendor.
You
but
guys,
as I said before, I can certainly see separating an NES from a vendor.
This is all great, but you didn't say that in the motion.
No, I didn't, and there's a reason why. The lot of that is open to interpretation by the ED in the hiring process.
Thank you.
Any further discussion of this motion?
Jim here.
Yes, Jim.
I'm sensing that, just listening to what Grace was saying earlier, is that if we establish the right policies, the right criteria for this whole election process, so that we can, in fact, hold someone accountable, so that there is consequences for someone not following the policy, that we can identify early enough in the election to correct. I think if we place our emphasis on setting up the whole election process with some clear, defined policy, that we can get through this and manage it and monitor it without the kind of confusion and kind of mistakes that happened in the past.
Steve Brown?
Go ahead, Steve.
You know, I'm a little uncomfortable with the very general discussion of the reasons pro and con for the various proposals here. I would like to point out some specific instances that might occur and that might influence our vote on this. For example, the National Election Supervisor should be independent to the extent that he is able to guarantee a fair election no matter what. Let's say we have a situation in which, or make it extreme, Amy Goodman goes on the air during the middle of the election and says, vote for so-and-so or you'll die, or whatever it is. And the election supervisor says, okay, she's off the air, she's got to be fired, get rid of her, stop. And the executive director very properly says, there's too much money involved in Pacifica for that, you're fired. He says, I won't conduct the election or certify it unless you get that woman off the air. And the executive director says, no, you're fired. So we have a conflict of interest. If the executive director has that kind of control over the National Election Supervisor, we don't have a guarantee of fair election. Now, I posited an extreme example, but as everyone knows, in the last election, there were less extreme examples, but just as unfortunate, where the executive director controlled the election supervisor, and the election supervisor, Casey Peters, in his own report given about 2 or 3 months ago, I think I mailed a copy to everybody in the list, said the corporate counsel, and I think he was executive director at the time, unfairly and illicitly manipulated the election for his own purposes to get somebody in office, whatever the wording was. It's not a situation that I would like to see continued, and I say we have much more danger from Pacifica politics influencing the election than we have from some hypothetical situation in which the vending company can save some money by having smaller envelopes and works out a deal with the election supervisor to do that. I'm not afraid of that. That's my comment. I think that we should really carefully consider which is the greater conflict of interest.
Bill, how much time is left?
1 minute.